Welcome to the WCHL Community Forum, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development at Durham Technical Community College. Our monthly forum features Chapel Borough's elected officials and community leaders debating topics affecting our community and you. The discussion is sponsored by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to business and for business. More at opentobusiness.biz and by Durham Technical Community College, Durham and Orange County campuses. Do great things. The WCHL Community Forum begins now.
Welcome into the WCHL Community Forum for the month of December. This is the year in review forum that we're taking a look at today on 97.9 The Hill. A little bit of a different format, once in a year in review start here for our community forum this year. This was the first year we didn't have one massive marathon day of 10 hours of live broadcast back-to-back throughout the day, bringing you the latest on whatever topic of the day that was that day. Instead, this year, we did one of these forum a month, and that allowed us to be a little more flexible and try to bring you things in a little more timely of a manner as well with the topics that are of most importance of that moment for the WCHL Community Forum Year in Review Edition. I'm Blake Hodge with 97.9 The Hill, and very proud to be able to bring in Aaron Keck, host of the Aaron Keck Show afternoons throughout the week here on 97.9 The Hill as well. And Aaron, it's been a big 2017. I was looking back through what we covered this year in terms of things that just analytically maybe did the best, trying to jog my memory of things, because it's been quite a lot to cover this year.
It's been a really fascinating year, and I mean that in both the very positive and the extremely negative sense, right, when it comes to news. It's sort of an interesting position for us, being WCHL, a station that focuses on the hyper-local and therefore local news. In 2017, you had so many issues that were highly important and of note and much discussed on the national level, yeah, and a little bit to a lesser extent on the state level, that local news oftentimes got short shrift when it came to what was grabbing people's attention in 2017. And yet, looking back at this year, there were a lot of significant local developments, which, yeah, I think when we cover it over the hour, you'll see just how significant a year it was, just focusing on issues of importance to Chapel Hill and Carrboro and Orange County.
The first of these kind of modified community forum that we had was looking at the Trump White House and the effect, mm-hmm, that was having on local governments. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking at that point about what was going to happen with DACA. We still don't know what's going to happen with DACA. Talking about governance in general as a tool to communicate with the public and express the views of the public. So, you know, going all the way from the White House down to 80,000 people in Orange County don't have, yep, water. It was, yeah, yeah, quite an interesting year.
And it's very much for better or worse, right? And like, mm-hmm, the current president is using a new means of communication hitherto unknown 10 years ago to communicate with millions of people all at once. He's not doing it well. So you can communicate with your constituents in positive and negative ways, and that's something that we've seen in 2017, and Owosso is a great example of that.
Yeah.
How do you get the word out to 80,000 people in a very short period,
yeah,
of time without causing massive chaos? And that was an interesting thing in February.
It was a fun couple of days, yeah, there. We'll get into that here momentarily. But
is that going to be on our list of,
I
of
think
looking back at the year?
It,
yeah,
might make
not having water
the top list. Oddly enough, not what we're going to start with, though. There's another story that has been dominant, certainly more recently, and I hope we're not doing it just because of that, but really since August, we've been pretty consistently, it's hard to go a couple of days without talking about Silent Sam. Mm-hmm. Some days it's the only thing that we're talking about. And of course, the Confederate monument standing on UNC's McCorkle Place has been a point of protest for years. This is not a new thing, but it has been re-energized recently, talking about the 2015 law that prevents movement of objects of remembrance, quote unquote, these symbols that are on state grounds. And they came under renewed fire really after August, whenever there was a white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, that was kind of branded as being a protest of that city council decision in Charlottesville to remove the, I believe it was Robert E. Lee statue, a Confederate monument, from public grounds in that space. It turned into a white supremacist rally, well beyond any kind of normal quote-unquote protest that we might think of. A counter-protest ensues of people speaking out against that white supremacy, and one of those at the counter-protest ends up being killed when a white supremacist drives a vehicle into a large crowd and injures dozens, kills one individual, Heather Heyer. That happens in August. We come back August 22nd. It's the first day of classes for the fall semester at UNC. And that's always a very energetic time, of course, getting started with a new year. It's also an interesting time to see new people getting acclimated to the campus. You know, for those of us that are here every day and working near or on the campus, you kind of become numb to some things, but every time there's a new swath of individuals coming in, students, faculty, staff, whatever it may be, they get introduced to things and you get reintroduced to them. And they had a massive reintroduction and introduction to Silent Sam. It was a very large protest out there. It shut down Franklin Street for a little while. They marched to Margaret Spelling's house, the system president, and it really felt like there was a lot of momentum in that moment to move the statue. And yet here we are 6 months later, and Silent Sam is still as tall on McCorkle Place as he was that day.
Yeah, and I think one of the really noteworthy things about 2017 as far as that goes, we've had the debate about Silent Sam for, as you said, many years. We've had protests, we've had counter-protests. I was at one a couple of years ago where a whole bunch of people in Confederate gear showed up to defend Silent Sam, and that was in response to an earlier discussion about what do we do with the statue. So it's not like this just becomes a thing in 2017, but I think what does become a thing in 2017, more so than before, and we'll talk about this later when we get to the Me Too movement as well. I think they are sort of similar developments in this particular sense, that people are more and more waking up, looking around at their society, seeing things that we hadn't seen before, in the sense of these things are out in the open, they're in public, they're generally known and understood, but we're looking at them and saying, why have we tolerated this for so long? What is positive about this? What is not negative about this? And coming up empty in terms of trying to come up with an answer and saying, maybe it's time we move on.
It feels different than these kind of what we kind of deem as generational shifts sometimes. And this feels larger than that. This feels like a more societal pivot of, no, this is no longer acceptable. But the statue is still there. We've got a numerous faculty from whole departments and faculty, students, grad students, everybody coming out in opposition of Silent Sam. But the administration, Chancellor Carol Folt, has said multiple occasions that she would order the statue be removed if she felt she had the authority to do so, but has maintained that she does not feel she has that authority thanks to that 2015 state law passed by the Republican-led General Assembly. The State Historical Commission has kind of become the de facto body that everyone is looking to here. The governor, Roy Cooper, has asked that body to allow for the removal of Confederate monuments from the state capitol grounds. Instead of making a decision whenever that body met back in September, they decided to study the issue with whatever means were taken into account at that moment.
With all deliberate speed, I'm sure.
And that body meets 2 to 4 times a year. So they're coming back in April 2018 after much studying, I'm sure, and we'll see what type of decision they make.
But all of this is also known as kicking the can down the road, by the way.
They've had score at home. New board members brought onto the commission since then, so I'm very curious to see whether they will need additional time to study at that point. But you know, it's still there, and there was a public comment session that was held on the UNC Chapel Hill campus. It was by the Board of Trustees, and it was a really powerful couple of hours, really, that was spent with story after story being told of very personal anecdotes of people avoiding that portion of campus entirely, saying that that makes them feel unwelcome entirely on the campus. And rather than me trying to put into words what they said, we'll just bring back our report from 97.9 The Hill here from that actual meeting of the UNC Chapel Hill Board of Trustees.
UNC students, faculty, and community members were given the chance to directly address the Board of Trustees Wednesday at a public comment session held at the Chancellor's Ballroom at the Carolina Inn regarding Silent Sam. The session was called by Board Chair Haywood Cochran, who stated that campus safety is a priority, along with delivering an accurate depiction of the university's history.
We are committed, as we've said many times in the past, to sharing the full and accurate story of our university's history, and continue to work with Chancellor Folt and her task force on UNC Chapel Hill history and on the Confederate monument and other issues.
Many of the speakers, including UNC history professor Fitzhugh Brundage, believe that the moving of the monument would not inhibit the university from telling that story.
As a historian, I'm keenly aware of the need to preserve history. To advocate that the monument be moved is not to advocate the erasure of history.
Brundage goes on to state that keeping Silent Sam at its current location is in direct violation of student safety.
The continued presence of this monument in its current location is a threat to the safety of the people of our university, and it is a daily affront. And that it is an affront is clear.
Other speakers went on to comment on the blundered undercover operation by UNC officer Hector Borges and questioned whether the university's goal was to protect their students or to spy on them. This was the message of Maya Little, a graduate student and teacher's assistant in the history department.
Free speech is not a crime. Fighting for racial justice is not a crime, and we should not be treated like criminals. I ask you all, in an effort to create real transparency at this university, to foster an atmosphere of actual respect and inclusivity for your students, faculty, and staff, to take a stand against the use of police surveillance, infiltration, and sabotage on our campus.
While the vast majority of speakers were staunchly pro-removal of Silent Sam, a few alumni came out in support of the statue, such as James Ward.
The statue should remain because it is a memorial to these sons of the university. It should remain because it tells a part of the history of the university. It should remain because this university should not succumb to the demands of any group, because it demonstrates the most and shouts the loudest.
UNC senior Mario Benevente mentioned the dangers and threat of violence that he and other protesters have faced.
I was there when three folks from out of town decided to come in and ask us what we would do if they came back with more of their friends and if they came back with guns. What will we do then?
Emotions ran high for some speakers, such as Maya Roberson, a second-year doctoral student who says she avoids the side of campus with Silent Sam every day.
You may be tempted to call me a coddled millennial, and that is fine, but I am human, I am black, and I am fed up.
Perhaps the most poignant part of the session came when UNC undergrad Miriam Madison recited the song Strange Fruit, made popular by Billie Holiday.
Southern trees bear strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root, black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees.
Despite continued community outrage and protest, Chancellor Folt and the Board of Trustees have yet to speak out for the removal of the statue. Folt and Cochran both ended the session by thanking everyone that spoke. Kelly Fahey, 97.9 The Hill.
Now, Aaron, a couple of things that were said during that stuck out to me and continue to today were some of the stories of saying, you know, I believe her quote was, "You can call me a coddled millennial, and that's fine, mm-hmm. but I'm fed up.
Yeah.
I'm just tired of this day-to-day oppression that she felt on the campus." But I asked afterwards what kept this from being just an airing of grievances, because the campus is maintained. They don't have the authority to even go to the state commission and ask for this to be removed, that it would have to come from the Board of Governors.
We haven't mentioned this, but yeah. Carol Folt, when that state historical commission met, did not send a petition to the commission asking them for permission to remove the statue, and when asked afterwards by you, I do believe, said, well, the governor didn't ask us if we wanted to be on his petition, therefore we didn't submit a petition at all.
We had a bit of
a bizarre response.
Let's just be honest. We had a bit of a fumbling back and forth there.
Yes.
Carol Folt and I trying to determine who exactly could bring a petition.
The fumbling caused by you saying, yes, but why didn't you submit a petition? And her saying, what are you talking about?
Basically what it has come down to is the Board of Trustees and UNC Chapel Hill administration feels that under their structure of governance, any request would have to come from the Board of Governors. And that body has shown no public interest in moving Silent Sam. Mm-hmm. That body has been in the news a lot on their own right for several things over the past 3 years, really, but over the last year in particular, since this is our year in review forum here on 97.9 The Hill. The top things that seem to be getting people's attention this year were the free speech policy that was just passed. It was ordered by the General Assembly in some form. They gave them a couple of directives, and then they built a policy off of that. The ACLU of North Carolina has expressed some concern that this will, quote, chill free speech on university campuses. And one thing to point out, UNC, the system, has already had six institutions given the green light by FIRE, the kind of right-leaning free speech monitoring organization. Green lights meaning they are the most open to free speech on campus. So there was some concern over why this was deemed necessary. And part of that has been protests going on at other campuses across the country whenever these kind of extremist provocateurs have been brought onto campus and incited violence in some cases.
So, and you're getting back to the students at the public comment period who said, you may call me a coddled millennial, but I'm sick and tired and fed up of this. It's not just about Silent Sam. Silent Sam alone is bad enough that it stands there and that it's defended by the university, whether they think that's because they don't have the power to take it down or not. But there is more substance underneath Silent Sam as well. You mentioned that policy by the Board of Governors. It's a free speech policy, quote unquote, but it's targeting protesters. In that confrontation between the established order and protesters, the Board of Governors is taking a stance against protesters in favor of the established order. They shut down the Center for Civil Rights on campus, which we'll get to later. There are serious issues involving race in admissions, involving race in just everyday student life on campus. All of these things build up on top of each other, on top of each other, on top of each other in the context of 2017, which is dominated in the news by, you mentioned the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, and that wasn't the first or the only one, just the one that got the most attention.
Yeah.
There is serious concern, more so now than before, about race on campus and who the university, whether it's UNC Chapel Hill or the Board of Governors writ large, is defending when it comes to clashes between white supremacist and protesters in the case of Charlottesville. And all of this is happening in the context of this new fundraising campaign called Carolina for All Kind, which tries to emphasize the extent to which UNC is for everyone. Yeah. And this stands in the way of that message.
And that was brought up several times, as you heard, during the public comment session. So we'll continue to see how that progresses. The WCHL Community Forum for the month of December, talking year-end review, Blake Hodge alongside WCHL's Aaron Keck on 97.9 The Hill.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit.
To foodies.
To innovation.
To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit opentoo.biz.
The Orange County campus of Durham Tech is booming with 70% more course offerings. This is Penny Gluck, Executive Dean of Durham Tech's Orange County campus, here to invite you to find out why your neighbors and their kids are being educated by us in careers for the 21st century. We specialize in healthcare careers, including emergency medical management, computers, the arts, and much more. To see the full catalog, go to durhamtech.edu. I look forward to seeing you on campus here in Orange County.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
Welcome back into the WCHL Community Forum, 97.9 The Hill. I'm Blake Hodge alongside Aaron Keck. He is the host of The Aaron Keck Show, appropriately named here on 97.9 The Hill. You can hear it Monday through Friday, 3 to 7, most days.
Except on
Mondays,
Monday,
you get kicked off a little early for your health.
And yes.
If there's...
For my health, I get kicked off a little early.
Also, the Your Health Radio Show
yes.
that you can hear on 97.9 The Hill. This is the December WCHL Community Forum looking at the year-end review. We spent a whole bunch of time there talking about Silent Sam on the UNC campus, the Board of Governors, and their status on that and some other decisions throughout the year that has drawn some attention. One thing that the local angle on this has taken a little more definitive action on is the Confederate flag. And we're kind of continuing that symbolic discussion here, or discussion of symbols, not a symbolic discussion, but from Silent Sam to the Confederate flag and from the university campus to pre-K or K-12 campuses, I should say. And Chapel Hill Carbondale City Schools and the Orange County Schools, they were both discussing bans in some way of trying to create safe campuses across both districts for students to come in, not worry about racism and the oppression, white supremacy that we've been talking about with Silent Sam in their K-12 environment.
And say pre-K-12 because they're not renovating Lincoln Center, so all those pre-K classes.
we'll get to that momentarily. but it happened to come that the vote on the Orange County side of this, they were not going to put an outright ban of the Confederate flag. They were going to put a ban on oppressive symbols and kind of leave it vague in an attempt to
not... It was going to be Confederate flag, and then they went back and said, well, let's broaden it to encompass offensive symbols.
In the time that it took to do that, Charlottesville happened.
Yes.
And they came out, I think it was that weekend... Charlottesville happened. They had their meeting on Monday night already scheduled. They blew up the policy, not blew up, but they added language to the policy to put an outright ban on the Confederate flag in that policy. And we've got WCHL's Joey DeVito here with his report from that meeting.
After nearly a year of debate and deliberation, the Orange County School Board unanimously approved a new dress code that specifically bans students from wearing the Confederate flag, the swastika, or other symbols of oppression. Board Chairman Stephen Halkiotis said he was moved by the events in Charlottesville, Virginia over the weekend.
The tragic loss of a 32-year-old woman, an innocent human being. The tragic loss of two Virginia state troopers who were there to provide for the health, safety, and welfare of all people in the city of Charlottesville cannot go unnoticed.
The initial language of the dress code did not specifically name the Confederate flag or any other symbols of oppression. Halkiotis explained the language he recommended, which would eventually become part of the dress code.
Students are not to wear clothing, buttons, patches, jewelry, makeup, face, body paint, or any other item with words, phrases, symbols, pictures, or signs that are indecent, profane, or substantially disruptive, including items that are reasonably expected to intimidate other students on the basis of race. Right after the word race, right before the comma, I want parentheses. I'm recommending parentheses that say, for example, Ku Klux Klan, KKK, swastikas, and the Confederate flag.
Language was also added to include protection for national origin, sex, gender, sexual orientation, disability, age, and religious affiliation. The change to the dress code is a victory for the Hate-Free Schools Coalition, which was formed with the goal of getting the Confederate flag out of Orange County schools. Members of the group cheered when the final version of the dress code was passed. Superintendent Todd Wirt said he met with the principals to discuss the issue.
I saw a unified desire, commitment, and level of courage on the part of our principals and assistant principals to eliminate symbols of intimidation in our schools. They were as unified and as motivated as I've seen them in a very long time.
In an effort to implement the dress code as soon as possible, the board waived the second reading, which would have pushed back the final vote to another meeting. Joey DeVito, 97.9, The Hill.
And we followed that up with the Chapel Hill Carbondale City Schools Board of Education, which had not been having this same discussion and kind of in other conversations, not on the record or in actual interviews. It certainly came across as though they were very happy to not be actively having that same level of heated conversation that was going on in the Orange County schools level. They came out and also enacted a ban on the Confederate flag. We were able to speak with the board chair at the time, James Barrett, about that decision.
Certainly, we've been aware of what's going on in the Orange County schools. We've had differing opinions on our board about the strength of the First Amendment argument and whether we needed to put into policy a restriction on things. It was a healthy debate, sort of one-on-one. We certainly had not discussed it as a full board, but we've had a lot of discussions with the community. And so we certainly recognized, I think we were clear in what we wanted to do. We were clear in that our expectation is that the Confederate flag and the swastika, obviously, are symbols of hate, and we don't believe they have any purpose in our schools. The question was really how we wanted to get there, and I think administration has felt that they had good tools. The policy, the anti-bullying policy, the orderly conduct of the schools. Those policies both existed, and administration was using those policies to address issues as they knew it. But what came out yesterday, as we were consulting with our lawyer and talking to principals, was that we still have a number of things that have happened. There's been vandalism of schools. There's been racially inspired fights. There's obviously the well-publicized incident at East Chapel Hill over the Confederate flag. So when you sort of add up all those up, I think that sort of counterbalances the First Amendment issue as well as the Charlottesville situation. It's not local to us, but obviously Charlottesville and our community are very similar, both being large college towns. And we recognize that we don't want anything like that here, and it's sort of Charlottesville sort of drove it home that it could happen here. It's because it's not a different community than ours, we feel like we worry about whether it could happen here. So all those things added up together to say it was absolutely time to make a change. School starting in a little more than a week really made it important to get out ahead of this. This change, having it written in policy, allows administration to be proactive about it, to talk about the expectations clearly with students and staff, and make it a positive conversation, a teachable moment that they can actually explain what's expected, how we interact with each other, what we don't do in terms of images of hate and oppression. So.
You mentioned that 2015 issue at East Chapel Hill High School. It was part of a field trip to Gettysburg where some students posted a picture of posing with the Confederate flag and also some comments that were associated with that caused a lot of disturbance amongst the community. There was a lot of discussion about this issue at that time, and it kind of went away as it just does from time to time. But coming back up now, what has kind of changed among the thought of the board to risk, you know, going into a lawsuit and all the things that are associated with the concerns over putting an outright ban on things like that. Why? What changed from that discussion that was happening in our community to last night?
There have been more incidents, other incidents that give us more legal backing. The Supreme Court has said that we have to have some history that shows that we have a reasonable expectation of disturbance of school. And it's not just when we say disturbance of school, that makes it sound like a global thing that, you know, you're going to have a big fight in the parking lot kind of thing. It is really disturbance to any student's learning. And so when a student is scared because another student is intimidating them, whether that be because they've got a sticker on a notebook and they're kind of flashing it around in the hallways, or whether it's someone, you know, driving a truck with a big flag off the back of it. Those are all things that make students scared and make them not learn well because of that. And so making sure that those students are protected and we are making sure that learning is happening every day is absolutely what's critical to us.
Now, Aaron, one thing that stood out to me in that conversation with James Barrett was the length of time to kind of gather and answer whenever we asked. You had this conversation 2 years ago. Mm. What changed between now and then to ban the Confederate flag?
Yeah.
And it was a lot of thought put into that answer. What do you think? There's been a shift. Even, you know, we think of ourselves in this Chapel Hill Carborough area that we cover and that we are in so often, of being on the front leg of anything progressive in terms of the residents of this area. Do you think there's been that shift locally, or are we still trying to carry that banner without the action at some
times? Yeah, no, I don't think there's been a shift locally in terms of what people think necessarily. Where I think there's been a shift is in the urgency, right? Because this was all taking place in the context of, first of all, a number of different things happening locally. This debate started in Orange County schools because parents raised the concern after some kids decided that it was a good idea to go to school wearing Confederate flag shirts, and their parents were 100% behind them in that. And this created, as you can imagine, an issue. But this wasn't the first or the only one. A couple of years ago, was it, at East Chapel Hill High School?
Yeah,
in 2015. I'm glad we were thinking of the exact same thing. The students at East Chapel Hill High School go up to Gettysburg on a class field trip, and they're taking like selfies with the Confederate flag and hashtag the South will rise again. And it's kids being kids, but it's still
to a certain level
a significant issue.
We do actually have other things going on throughout the community that we want to squeeze into this WCHL Community Forum for the month of December, this year in review edition of the Community Forum with WCHL's Aaron Keck. I'm Blake Hodge on 97.9 The Hill.
Get ready to try something new, or maybe fulfill a lifelong dream. Sign up for continuing education courses at the Durham or Orange County campuses of Durham Tech. You can explore everything from photography to culinary arts, information technology to healthcare, EMS training to foreign language essentials. And you can take many of the courses in the evening or on the weekend. So go ahead, visit durhamtech.edu and click on continuing education. And get ready to do great things.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz.
and by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
Welcome back into the WCHL Community Forum for the month of December, year-in-review edition of the WCHL Community Forum with the Aaron Keck Show host, Aaron Keck, here Hello. With us. I'm Blake Hodge, 97.9 The Hill. Aaron, looking back over the year-in-review, one thing that has happened very recently but has kind of year-long pieces to it is the work going on or that will go on at Chapel Hill High School now. We've known for a long time that Chapel Hill High is in very poor physical condition. Mold, mildew, whenever it floods or whenever it rains heavy, they're having flooding issues over there. There was a very large bond, $120 million school bond, put on the November 2016 ballot, passed overwhelmingly. Part of it went to Orange County for the Orange County schools, part of it to Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools. They had two projects, Chapel Hill High and work at the Lincoln Center, which is district headquarters. They were also going to consolidate pre-K there. Bids come in well over the original budget for the Lincoln Center, which was the first one in the procedural part of that process. And a revolt from Chapel Hill High parents has led to reversal of the decision to go forward with Lincoln Center. Not really a reversal of that. They hadn't ultimately prioritized one over the other, but prioritizing now Chapel Hill High moving forward. One thing that Todd LaFreeze said during that meeting was that as a community, we needed to become more nimble. He pointed to it being the 09-10 year whenever they first started talking about Chapel Hill High. And we need to find ways to be more nimble in terms of funding and approving these projects, because we went through a lengthy public hearing process to get the Lincoln Center SUP, special use permit, approved by the Chapel Hill Town Council. And now that's not even moving. Mm-hmm. You talked with Pam Heminger and Chapel Hill Mayor about this a little bit. What do you pick up on as a sense of ways that that could be moved along a little bit?
The Chapel Hill High School
Well,
project,
just yeah, being just more in nimble in general. Is there hope of that? I mean, we're in an area where development of any kind is notoriously slow.
Right. Let's take one lesson from 2008 and apply it to 2017. There's always hope. we're recording this as the Star Wars saga is the number one movie in the box office, and the message underlying everything is there's always hope, even when things look as grim as they possibly are. There's always the hope for change in the future. It's a really fascinating thing, and you mentioned the mold and the mildew at Chapel Hill High School. That creates, it doesn't make the experience of being at Chapel Hill High School very good. We've been talking for many, many years about a morale issue at Chapel Hill High School, and you know that's connected with the mold and the mildew and the HVAC issues and everything else, because everything else that they've been trying to do at Chapel Hill, changing administrators and this and that, doesn't seem to be moving the dial on morale, because the constant is mold and mildew and HVAC issues. So there's that concern, too, underlying all of this. I think the really fascinating thing in the last 7 years is that there has been a lot of movement in Chapel Hill towards streamlining that development process. This was an issue. This has been an issue for years and years and years, where you had developers who have these projects. They go forward. They submit the proposal. And then 8 years later, they might get a yes. But in the meantime, they've already spent gobs of money. They've gone through process after process. They've had complaints they've had to address. There have been public hearings after public hearings, and ultimately they might get the development. And we've known that that's an issue, so we've tried to streamline the development process. We did it at Ephesus Fordham, right? Mm-hmm. We started with this desire to redevelop the Ephesus Fordham area, which was necessary. The intersection at Ephesus and Fordham is ridiculous. Rams Plaza was impossible to get to, etc. And we created this form-based code that was designed to streamline the development process. And of course, now that the form-based code is being put into effect and we're seeing the development resulting from it, now people are upset about that and they want to change the code. So there's always going to be this sort of push and pull, I think, between the need for a streamlined development process and the desire to keep things the way they are,
yeah,
right?
That's what we hear often.
Or for the people to be in control of development. If you create this form-based code and you just set that into motion and let it go, then the people don't have the same say that they did before. You're
right.
Giving the people who created the code.
The form-based code being guidelines that a developer can come, and if you hit those guidelines, the manager can approve it going before the Chapel Hill.
And I don't mean to go from Chapel Hill High School straight to Ephesus Fordham, but I think they're two sides of the same coin, right?
Absolutely.
It's concern about development in Chapel Hill and in Orange County, but Chapel Hill in particular. So it's a very concerning question, because Todd LaFreeze is exactly right, and we all know he is, that if this development proposal or this renovation proposal had been made 7 years ago and passed, it would have cost way less than it does now, and maybe we could be renovating Lincoln Center or dealing with the other $300 million of renovation work that needs to be done to the schools in Orange County. But the process took 7 years, and now we're to the place that we are. So let's streamline the process. But by streamlining the process, we're taking away people's ability to go to 15 public hearings and speak out, and people don't like that, especially in Chapel Hill, where we like to be a part of the decision-making process, and the town boards and the county boards actively want people to be involved in the decision-making process, because we care about democracy as well. So there's a lot going on here.
Well, one thing that you mentioned there with the Ephesus Fordham side of that has been a lot of renovations, and some people are now blaming those renovations and the new form-based code guidelines as reasons that some longtime local businesses in that area are now going out of business. Grimble Jewelers being one that's been there for almost three decades, I believe, after moving from Carmel Mall. Twig is another in Ephesus Fordham in the Village Plaza there with Grimble Jewelers that is closing. Kitchen Works here at University Place is closing. Those are all
Blue Hill.
Have been long-serving businesses in the community. Whenever we're looking at this, I don't know if unintended consequences is really the right word term for this, but we've had a lot of conversations with people about ways to keep local businesses, whether they be spinoffs from the university, local entrepreneurs, whatever the case may be, and there's been a lot of effort for this throughout the year, talking about conditional zoning with the Chapel Hill Town Council and ways to try to provide some flex space. Carborough is talking about building some affordable commercial space. We talk about affordable housing all the time, but does this kind of give a gut punch to that, in your opinion, right at the end of 2017?
Desire to keep local businesses? Well, anytime a local business closes, especially when it's a long-standing local business that people like and recognize as part of the community, when that closes down, it hurts the local economy or the economy of a local business. Yeah, it hurts.
Speaking of kind of long-standing developments, hey, a Target opened this year in Chapel Hill.
That's good.
What about that?
Yeah,
we've got to wrap up the Chapelboro Week in Review. We will do that after this break on 97.9 The Hill with WCHL's Aaron Keck. I'm Blake Hodge.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration. To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
The Orange County campus of Durham Tech is booming with 70% more course offerings. This is Penny Gluck, Executive Dean of Durham Tech's Orange County campus, here to invite you to find out why your neighbors and their kids are being educated by us in careers for the 21st century. We specialize in healthcare careers, including emergency medical management, computers, the arts, and much more. To see the full catalog, go to durhamtech.edu. I look forward to seeing you on campus here in Orange County.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum, brought to you by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Chapel Hill is open to education, arts, and culture, and exploring the natural world. We're a diverse place that appreciates our past and looks forward to our future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. With many green building features, the state-of-the-art 20-acre Orange County campus of Durham Tech helps Orange County residents do great things as they pursue their education, workforce training, and lifelong learning. Now, back to the WCHL Community Forum.
Welcome back to the WCHL Community Forum for the month of December. I'm Blake Hodge alongside Aaron Keck of The Aaron Keck Show here on WCHL, talking about the 2017 year in review for this month's WCHL Community Forum. And Aaron, we've run through a lot of things throughout our community, but there are always, of course, a couple that we're not going to be able to get to. One that we want to make sure we mentioned was going back to that day in early February, whenever we started to get some information in that there was a boil water advisory initially after a water main break in Orange County. And within just a couple of hours, that went from a not routine thing, but something that we've seen on occasion, to something that I know I haven't seen before, of a do not use order being issued by Orange Water and Sewer Authority for all of Southern Orange County, basically. So 80,000 people with a do not use water service issued. What do you remember most from that day?
There was a basketball game that had to be moved down the road to Greensboro. Yeah. There were a lot of moving parts, such that initially you said boil water advisory, and we were bringing water in from Durham, and then there was that huge water main break. So it was this sort of mounting cavalcade of errors that led to all of that. So when the do not use order came in, I think the initial reaction was, no, it's a boil water advisory. It's boil water. No, it's do not use. And there was all that uncertainty. There's a lot of lost business. Hotels and restaurants had to shut down because of state laws there, and they lost hundreds of thousands, arguably, of dollars when all was said and done. The other thing, too, that came out of that was just the rapidity with which local officials got the word out to 80,000 people,
right,
including people who didn't have the usual means of communication. You couldn't send an email to them. You couldn't send a text. They were knocking on doors and letting people know. And that really underscores, I think, sort of the longer term here, is that chain of communication between town and county officials and residents, police departments and residents. You want to have that trust relationship built up so that when something like this happens, you can send the police to the homes of people and have them knock on doors and have the immediate reaction be, oh, it's the police, let me open up the door and see what the problem is, as opposed to mistrust, shut the door, don't open, which is what you might see in a lot of other communities that haven't built up that trust relationship over a
absolutely
lot of years.
And Lydia Lavelle always talks about the 6-point-something square miles of Carrboro where you can get around and knock on doors
really
if you really need to. The thing I remember the most at that point also is it's one thing to get the communication to certain kind of stakeholders in the group, to us, and then be able to reflect that to the community as best we can, or the Chamber of Commerce, to be able to say, hey, let your members know. But having someone actually be able to have the authority to say, no, you need to shut down was a big deal that day and moving forward.
Especially
certainly,
since the water was flowing out of the taps.
Yeah,
you
it was
turn
there.
On the water
right.
And there was water there.
So I know restaurants and everything, like you said, had to shut down for a little while, but ended up being, what was that, Friday through mid-Saturday?
Something like that,
without water. But eventually, everybody seemed to heed all the caution there. And that started with a keystroke error. We make keystrokes errors. All the time, and that one shut down
keystroke
water
error
Orange
on
County.
Day when they were giving a tour of the facility and there was like an argument that was going on over here so that no one was supervising or overseeing.
I believe it was Ed Kerwin at the press conference called it a perfect storm. And you know, whenever you hear that as a reporter, sometimes you feel like maybe they're going a little overboard or just, you know, kind of cliche, and then you run through exactly what happened. You're like, no, that actually works here. One thing that we have seen nationally really pick up a lot of momentum and draw a lot of support that has also led to some abrupt career endings in the political and business world is the Me Too movement, sexual harassment, sexual assault. And this is yet again what we referenced earlier, feels like more of a shift than some of this just younger generational mindset shift on certain things that we see on topics all the time. This feels, again, like a societal turning point of what we're doing here. We've seen senators come down, still hasn't reached the White House as of this recording. But locally, we saw the impact of that as well. And I know it's something that was important to you.
Yeah, with the DSI Comedy Theater. It really predated Harvey Weinstein and Al Franken and all of these others that has actually really started to gain attention in Chapel Hill in July before, a couple of months before, it made the national news when stories came out about Harvey Weinstein, Kevin Spacey, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Jerry Richardson now at the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump, you mentioned. There's a public policy polling survey that says 53% of Americans think he should resign for the sexual harassment charges, even before we get to any of the other things that people might be upset with the president over. Just the sexual harassment charges, 53% of Americans think he should resign. And I think that's a reckoning, too. We started talking about this in the context of Silent Sam. Let's wrap up by talking about this in the context of the Me Too movement. It is not something that we didn't know. There are a lot of people who are out saying publicly, oh man, I had no idea that all of this was going on. No, we knew, but it wasn't, we may not have known the extent of it, but we knew that sexual harassment was a serious issue in society, in the business world, in positions of power, in the business world, in politics. But what happened just in the last few months is we are now at that reckoning point where we say, wait a minute, we've been just not even turning a blind eye, but looking right at it and doing nothing this entire time. Why have we been reacting that way? What on earth was our rationale? That's silly. Let's actually do something about this now. Let's actually react in a way that there are consequences for crap behavior like this. And that's what's happened in the last few months, or that's what's starting to happen in the last few months. And I still say this that we're seeing is the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
Because this goes way deeper than the few dozen cases that have made the national news in the last couple of months.
Aaron Keck is host of The Aaron Keck Show here on 97.9 The Hill. I'm Blake Hodge, and this is the December WCHL Community Forum, where we take a look back at the 2017 year in review. You can get a lot more information about all the stories we talked about today and go back and listen to archived copies of previous Community Forum as well by visiting our website, chapelboro.com. This is the December WCHL Community Forum on 97.9 The Hill.
This month's WCHL Community Forum was presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Its mission is to support opportunities to put Chapel Hill's people to work and create economic prosperity for all, now and in the future. More at opentobusiness.biz. And by Durham Tech. $500 scholarships are now available at Durham Tech for any Chapel Hill, Carrboro, or Orange County High School resident who graduated from their local high school in the past year. So go to durhamtech.edu and type Connect Funds into the search box and get ready to do great things.
Get ready to try something new, or maybe fulfill a lifelong dream. Sign up for continuing education courses at the Durham or Orange County campuses of Durham Tech. You can explore everything from photography to culinary arts, information technology to healthcare, EMS training to foreign language essentials, and you can take many of the courses in the evening or on the weekend. So go ahead, visit durhamtech.edu and click on continuing education, and get ready to do great things.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit. To foodies.
To innovation. To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit opentoo.biz.